Chris, tell us about your box.
Yeah.
Excuse me, sir?
Your box.
I am not that kind of guy.
A Geek Fuel Monthly box?
Oh.
What were you thinking we were talking about?
Nothing. Okay. I'll talk about Geek Fuel, though.
Yeah, yeah.
Sure.
Yeah,
it's warm.
It's warm.
And inviting.
And, ooh.
Oh, yeah, no, Geek Fuel is amazing.
It's amazing.
Every month, every delivered month. To your doorstep.
So every month you get a new box.
A new box.
Not an old box.
Right. One box is not enough for everybody.
I see. So a fresh box.
A fresh box.
Each month.
Every month. And inside that box, a veritable cornucopia of wonder.
Oh, man.
That's an amazing box.
It is.
You know, you telling me about this box just makes me want to see what's inside that box.
Right. It's the box that all the boys and girls want.
Huh.
My Geek Fuel brings all the boys to the yard.
That's...
And they see all the geeky products inside. They're amazing. There's stuff from DC, Marvel, Dungeons & Dragons, Stranger Things, Firefly, Star Wars. I can't even begin to tell you all the things.
That's a lot of stuff in one box.
It fit in one box, yeah. There's just stuff it in there, huh?
Yeah. It's like a D&D box of holding. They just,
ooh.
Yeah.
So I like that, huh? And how do you get this box?
Do you have to like roll a 9D dice to get this box?
No. You can. There's a couple different ways.
Okay.
You can wine it and dine it.
All right.
And see if it comes home with you.
Okay.
That might not work, though.
That might not work.
You can, however, go to allofmyissues.com.
Okay.
No. Yes, well, there's a link on All of My Issues.
Yeah, there's a link.
And there's also, you can go to geekfuel.com/allofmyissues.
There you go.
Wow.
And if you do that, you'll pay less for that box.
Everybody wants to pay less for their box.
Correct. Yes. You don't want to pay too much for the box.
No.
Nope. Never.
Never. Never. And if you can save $3 on your box...
Why wouldn't you?
That's right.
So order Geek Fuel.
Geekfuel.com/allofmyissues.
You'll love the box. I guarantee it.
Episode 42.
42!
The 42.
That's right, the big 42.
That's a lot of deuces in that.
That's a lot of intros right there. That's a lot of people. A lot of voices in this intro.
What's going on?
Here we go!
Yes!
Best comic book, or comic origins, best origins, I guess.
Best origin stories.
Origin stories.
Favorite origins.
That we
favorite
came up with.
Origin stories.
How they came to be, how it is.
We're going to lay it on you.
That's right.
All over you. You're going to like it.
There you go.
And we also give a tribute to...
legendary comic creator.
That's right.
Len Wein.
Who we just lost.
Yes.
All right. So without further ado...
Or a deuce.
Let's get started.
I'm Sam.
I'm Chris.
All right. And today, we're going to talk about...
Origin stories.
Origin stories.
Yay!
Some of our favorite origin stories.
Heroes, villains, characters.
Characters. Yes. Some of these you may have heard of. Some of them you may not.
Keep you on your toes.
Keep you on your toes. Ones that we liked and we think that, you know, if they haven't been... properly captured in film format or in TV shows or whatever, that maybe they should be given a little bit of time and maybe they should do that with some of these characters.
All right.
And most of mine have. in some way, shape, or form.
And some of mine have also, but I think maybe some of mine could be maybe done a little bit better at times. You'll probably know what we're talking, or at least what I'm talking about when I get to them. So.
What you talking about, Rick?
What am I talking about?
So, what does tradition hold?
There's one thing that I can think of when I think of tradition.
And what is that, sir?
That is that Sam
leads the way.
Leads the way.
He is the trailblazer of number fives all the way to number ones.
There you go.
There we go. All right. I'll get the ball rolling.
The ball is in your court.
Because when I think of tradition and balls, I think of Sam.
Oh,
in that order?
Not necessarily.
Not necessarily.
In that order. All right. Well, for my number five of origin stories, it's kind of unique. It is Vampire Jubilee.
No.
Yes. You're like, who's Vampire Jubilee?
Yes, tell us that.
Vampire Jubilee is if you
it
are...
It sounds like a Transylvanian, like, tradition.
It's a Vampire Jubilee! Yeah.
This is a party!
I think that's...
It was a Vampire Oktoberfest.
Exactly. Maybe that was, like, what was happening in the beginning of Blade. It was a Vampire Jubilee.
Oh, that's, you know what? That's
Jubilee.
That is a very memorable scene. That's an awesome scene. So...
Vampire Jubilee is what happened was this all kind of stems from basically let's start off with No More Mutants when the Scarlet Witch said no more mutants and took away mostly all of the mutants' powers, which kind of was called M-Day. And it kind of left people, mutants who had powers, and almost decimated like the whole mutant population in the Marvel Universe. So let's fast forward to that, to where mutants got their powers back. Well, some of them. One particular mutant who is now a non-mutant anymore is Jubilee, Jubilicious Lee from the X-Men. She, you know, had lost her powers due to M-Day and everything. And one day she was out. Well, let me first start off as the first appearance of Vampire Jubilee was in X-Men. The series is called X-Men, The Curse of the Mutants, which came out in July of 2010. And how it starts off is Dracula's son, X-Russ, betrayed Dracula. And cursed him and basically killed Dracula to take over the vampire sect. So he gathered all the houses together and thought it was a good time to attack the mutants, because a lot of vampires have been getting killed due to, you know, Blade and other vampire hunters. So they wanted to build their armies more and make them more powerful. And they said, hey, the mutants are down. Let's convert mutants so we'll have mutant vampires with, you know, powers. And so they
who doesn't want mutant vampires?
Who though? Doesn't want mutant right. vampires?
Yeah.
That always goes well, right? So then they sent on a suicide bomber, one day in a park, and Jubilee and the mutant pixie were there, you know, having a picnic and a little group of people. And so a vampire with a trench coat and covered up and stuff all of a sudden took it off and was exposed to the sun and blew up, and all his blood and bones and everything splattered onto people, which include Jubilee. And what you come to find out is his blood was kind of altered a little bit for that to happen. So then that night, the vampires were calling out all the people who got splattered with the blood, they were falling into a vampire trance, and so they all those people were turned into vampires. But it comes to find out that they were targeting Jubilee.
Oh.
But she didn't go that day. She didn't go that night. But they end up she ended up going to the vampires another night because the X-Men, she somehow tricked the X-Men and escaped. And she was turned into a vampire. So now it is a battle between mutants and vampires, and it has this big going at it. The X-Men even brought back Dracula to kind of stop the war. At some point, Wolverine got turned into a vampire, and it was like just a big mess. But the reason why I picked this origin is because there's a scene where you see Cyclops as being the leader of the X-Men and how ruthless he can be. Because how Wolverine got turned into a vampire, he was going after Jubilee. But the thing is, before that, they had Wolverine test Wolverine's blood to see if it would get turned into a vampire or not. But they also secretly put nanoites in his blood so that his it would turn off his mutant healing power. And so then when Wolverine got turned into a vampire and they come attacking the X-Men, Cyclops just pressed the button and the nanites dissolved and Wolverine got his healing powers back, which turned him back to Wolverine instead of a vampire Wolverine. And he just slaughtered everybody. And basically that's just how ruthless Cyclops could be when he's not being a jerk.
Set off his own suicide bomb.
Yeah, exactly.
It was not a homicide bomb, I guess.
Exactly. But what would end up happening was, I mean, X-Men won, of course, but Jubilee, as of right now, is still a vampire.
Oh, that was my question. I didn't know if she was still a vampire.
So they're still trying to cure her, but she is still a vampire, but they have, like, curved her hunger. And crazy thing was, Blade was there, too, one of my favorites.
Oh, man, yeah.
He was there helping to kill Vampire, so.
As he does.
As he does.
As he is wont to do.
That's what he wants to do. So. That is my number five, is Vampire Jubilee.
I like that. That's cool. I didn't know about that. That's a pretty recent storyline.
Yeah. 2010. July of 2010. Curse of the Mutes. Pick it up.
I like it.
All right.
My five.
Your number five.
Is Dr. Victor Freeze.
Victor Freeze. You know what? It's funny because I was really seriously thinking about character.
Yeah.
But I did.
Originally created in 1959 by Bob Kane.
The Bob Kane.
David Wood, Sheldon Moldoff, and Logan Sadowski. He was a pretty non-important, but he stuck around. I mean, they didn't go into his backstory like they did later at that point. He was just a scientist who had a design for an ice gun, and he accidentally inadvertently spilled cryogenic chemicals on himself, resulting in him needing sub-zero temperatures to survive. But in the modern age, thanks to Paul, I guess I pronounced Dini, and Batman the Animated Series, they redid his story to be that he was always obsessed with cryogenics even as a child, and began to freeze animals, and his parents found out and sent him to a boarding school, and he felt horribly isolated and nobody whatever. But when he got to college, he met the woman of his dreams, Nora, and they got married. And then she ended up with a fatal illness. And so he uses the device to put her in cryostasis. Regardless, I love tragic things. You know, I love the sound of children playing.
Yes.
But if I... if I can't hear the sound of children playing, I like to read about tragic beginnings of villains. So it gave an old character new depth, and I like what they did. So
I that episode of Batman the Animated Series, that's probably one of my favorites. I was blown away by it. It was just it's so good. Because that is the first time they ever introduced that. Origin, right?
Yes. And then after Crisis, and after that show, that became
his story. That's cool. That show, I missed that show.
Batman Animated Series.
Yeah, I really do.
Yeah, it was good. I could never remember. Was Mr. Freeze and his wife ever get cured, or she just died?
No, I think in the original,
I believe she died.
Yeah, I think so.
And then some things, I think I know in the Arkham games and possibly in Gotham as well, she might still be alive, and he's trying to save her.
In Gotham, I think she is.
Okay. So yeah.
But in Gotham, I believe he did really bad criminal things and still locked up
Who knows how many. I mean, and all these changes of New 52s and all these things.
Don't mention
New 52. Yeah.
So that's my number five. But what about your number five, Rick?
My number five is a character I'm not sure how many people know about him. He was a circus performer. Not Robin.
No.
No. His name is Boston Brand, otherwise known as Deadman.
Okay.
I first appeared in Strange Adventures number 205 back in October of 1967. Created by Arnold Drake and Carmine Infantino. Ooh. I believe that's how you pronounce his name. Basically, the premise of him is he's a ghost, doomed to kind of roam the earth until he's able to find out who murdered him.
Hmm.
So his powers, basically, he's a ghost. So most people can't really see him unless they're mystic.
Got it.
In some form or another. He can possess people.
Yes.
Can control them. That's pretty much his big main powers, that he can possess them and control them and have them do. And as he possesses them, he can communicate with other people, letting him know that
he's there.
Exactly.
He's like Ghost Dad.
Exactly. I want to, the one thing though, the one caveat for him is if the person has a strong will, he may not be able to possess them. And an example of a person that he was not able to possess was Batman. Could not possess Batman. So, Deadman. Pretty interesting character.
So it's an analogy for lawyering up and making sure you have a strong will.
Yes.
As a dead man,
yes. Okay. You got it.
When you're dealing with a dead man, you need a strong will, right?
Yes. Okay.
Did they ever find out why they kill? I'm trying
to... There's been a couple different versions of this character, I think. So, again, with the DC retconning a little bit. I know one characterization that they used for him is he was kind of like a person that traveled. He was kind of in between worlds.
Okay.
In a way, he was kind of like a messenger or of limbo, if you will, where you could you'd see him as you were traversing into the afterlife.
Oh, okay.
So I don't know. I know that's what Alan Moore kind of did with him, and I think they've done some other things with him since then, but I'm not 100% sure which one's canon now, if you will.
Got it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's my number five, Deadman.
Moving on to Quattro.
Quattro.
Number four.
I'm bilingual.
My number four is DC's Fatality. Her first appearance was Green Lantern series number 3, issue 83, in February of 1997, created by our friend of the show.
Yes.
Daryl Banks. Her origin story is she was the eldest child of a royal family on the planet of, if I'm pronouncing this right, Zanshu. And if you are a Green Lantern aficionado, you would know that that planet was accidentally destroyed by John Stewart, because he was overconfident in trying to stop a bad guy, but ended up blowing up the planet. And so she was one of the only survivors, because she was, while when that happened, she was on a different planet, going to school or something like that, and she found out that her home planet, everyone that she loved, was destroyed by a Green Lantern. And so she sought out and she began training with different combats, different weapons, and went on a revenge field journey to kill as many Green Lanterns as she possibly can.
Oh.
Now, what I find fascinating is that if a few things was changed, this is kind of like Batman. Or Punisher, because basically, I mean, she's just trying to avenge the death of her planet. So you really can't get too.
It's all about perspective.
It's all about perspective.
Punisher.
She's a Punisher.
She's a cross between a bunch of people, really. Superman, the Punisher.
Yeah. So, I just found it very interesting. I mean, you know, she's going off killing. You're a Green Lantern, so you must die. You're a Green Lantern, and you must die. And it's kind of like, you kind of see her point where it's like, she really didn't know. She just knew it was a Green Lantern. And she didn't find out until later when she was battling Kyle Rayner, which is another, our good friend of the show, Daryl Banks' creation.
Now I know that you're saying that if I swear that we're not allowed to monetize this on YouTube. Listen to the Starfucker over here.
Dropping names.
Yeah.
Name dropping. As I heard one time, talk slut. But you come to find out, you know, that she did find out it was Jon Stewart, and she confronted him and,
from The Daily Show?
No, not from The Daily Show.
Oh, the other Jon Stewart.
The other Jon Stewart.
The one that's not as funny.
Yeah.
What? Is it? I mean,
he's kind of serious. He's a good guy.
I like him as a Green Lantern.
I like him too.
He's not as funny as Guy Gardner.
He's not a comedian.
Guy Gardner's more of a comedian.
Yeah. You know, the comedian is part of The Watchmen. It's owned by DC, but it's different.
Oh, that's
true.
Right.
That is true.
Not very funny, though. Yeah.
He gets the joke, though.
He gets it. But that is number 4, Fatality, is my origin story.
Nice.
Number 4.
I like it. That was a good pick.
All right. My number 4, not from the world of comic books.
Quattro.
I forgot I was bilingual already.
For all our Spanish listeners.
Yes. For all of our many Spanish listeners. I don't know any other languages. She. Japanese, right? Ichi ni san chi?
That could be. I don't know Japanese.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
I'm trilingual.
I can do it more. Korean.
You do Korean?
Yeah.
Yeah. What's
You know, I don't know that you necessarily can.
Yeah.
Put to the test.
I had to count my fingers.
Yeah.
And then,
you're bilingual only.
Yeah.
All right. In German, it would be ein plus ein plus ein plus ein.
I can say it in Swedish.
Okay.
It will to be a fear. Yeah.
Boom.
Yeah.
All right. My number 4 comes from the world of cinema and literature. His name is Vito Andolini. His story starts in 1901 in a small town called Corleone, Sicily. Where a local mafia head murders his father.
Nah.
And the mom and two, I believe, his siblings as well. The mom goes to the mafia chieftain and says, "Please don't kill my son." And he's like, "Well, because he's just little and he's not going to hurt anyone." And he says, "Well, he's going to grow up and want to kill me. Well, he's going to want revenge when he gets older, so I'm going to kill him anyway." So she sacrifices herself by holding a knife to his throat while her son runs away and is then, you know, taken to Ellis Island, smuggled out of the country by family friends. And he becomes, of course, the godfather, Don Corleone. The reason I chose this is because his story wasn't told in the first Godfather. Mm-hmm. You learned of what he was, and then in The Godfather 2, you see a younger version played by Robert De Niro.
In The Deuce.
In The Deuce.
Yeah. The Dose.
The Dose. The Knee.
The Knee.
You see The Dew.
The Dew.
I've lost track.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Well, I mean, I've lost track of how many languages that was.
That was,
That was four.
Yeah. There you go.
All right. Bring it all back to four.
Right.
Masters of Foreplay.
Whoa. Fantastic Wait. Four.
Well, yeah, that's probably better than what I said. Yeah. So anyway, yeah, I like the fact that they didn't give you his full background until the second movie, and they told it so well. You know, you saw how Michael came to power in the first one. That was really Michael's origin story in the first one. Mm-hmm. But by making it both a sequel and a prequel at the same time, I thought they did some interesting stuff there. So, and I just enjoyed that story. I mean, it's no Shawshank, but it's pretty good.
It's pretty good. It's pretty good. Yeah.
All right. That's the only time I mentioned Shawshank. But I just wanted to be able to say three in a row.
Three, there you go. Three in a row.
That's my motto. Not just on Fridays.
Oh, man. All right. My number four, Norrin Rad.
Oh.
People, Norrin Rad.
Okay.
Sounds like a cool surfing name.
It is. It's a super cool surfing name.
Yeah?
In fact, it is the Silver Surfer.
Oh.
So, yes.
Is it wrong that I've gone my entire life and never really put together the fact, I always knew his name, but I never put together the fact that they named a surfer Rad?
Maybe it's a little bit odd.
Yeah. I
always thought that's like the coolest name ever.
Yeah.
It's a pretty sweet name. Norrin Rad. Right? I mean, man, that's a pretty cool name. Created originally by V. Jack Kirby. All
right.
In Fantastic Four number 48, that came out way back in March 1966. 66 must have been a good year for surfing, apparently.
Apparently. Beach Boys.
There you go. So, yeah, the premise of the Silver Surfer, or Norrin Rad, as he's first introduced, is he was on the planet Zenla. And Galacticus doing what Galactus does, you know, eating planets and whatnot.
He is the Devourer of Worlds.
He is the Devourer of Worlds.
Which is also my nickname for my youngest child, but go on.
Oh, So Galactus comes to Zenla, Norrin Rad's home planet.
Okay.
And Norrin Rad is basically doing the most self-sacrificing thing that you could possibly imagine. He says that, "If you save my planet, and if you do not devour it, I will give myself to you and do whatever it is that you need to have done."
Got it.
Basically becoming the Herald of Galactus. Okay. So, Galactus agrees to this and imbues Norrin Rad with the power cosmic.
Yeah.
All right.
Thus making him become the Silver Surfer. That's a pretty cool origin story, I think.
Yeah, it is. I've always liked Lex. I always liked the Silver Surfer.
Yeah.
I've always wondered what would happen if the Silver Surfer fought Havoc. Because he has the power Cosmic and he shoots cosmic rays. Yeah. And Havoc absorbs cosmic rays and turns it into plasma.
That's
but I don't know if plasma hurts the Silver Surfer. So I was always curious.
That's a good question. It seems like they've kind of, like at times it seems like the Silver Surfer character seems to be super crazy powerful at times. And sometimes
it depends on who's writing it.
Yeah, it is. So, and sometimes it's not so much, but to me it makes sense that if he was super powerful because Galactus created him to, you know, basically work for him, you know, and he's flying through space on a surfboard for crying out loud.
Why do you need a surfboard in space?
So, I don't know. Yeah. It's a good question. Looks cool, though.
It does. Yeah. It'd be cool for, like, a Joe Satriani album.
Yeah, if were, like a cover.
Yeah.
A cover, you know, surfing with an alien, you know, because he's from
a... Well, he's not from a different planet, so
yeah.
He is from a different planet,
All right. That's my number quattro.
Under quattro.
Quattro.
Number three. The Trace.
The Trace.
Ooh. See? Yeah, The Trace.
The Tania.
We all have many tongues.
There we go. Whoa.
It's like the Tower of Babel up in here.
We can say basic numbers in many different languages.
That's about it.
I'm
going to go back to the Marvel Universe. My number three, it's going to be the Patriot. His first appearance was Young Avengers of April of 2005. his name is Elijah Bradley. He is the grandson of Isaiah Bradley, who up to this point was known as the Black Captain America, which I recommend the story, if you get the graphic novel or you can find the books, it's called Truth by Marvel. It gives the story of how Isaiah Bradley was considered the Black Captain America because they were doing experiments on doing World War II, if I remember correctly. But it's a good read and a good story. You should check it out. But I move on to The Patriot. What happened was, you know, after basically Avengers disassembled and everything, a group of teenagers wanted to make a difference. And so here comes The Patriot. Now, for the most part, he doesn't really have any real superpowers. He, at times, has some sort of enhanced strength or whatever. Unlike the other Young Avengers, which include the Hawkling and Wiccan and Hawkeye, which I can't remember. I think her name is Kate. And, basically, they're fighting bad guys. And it comes to find out that these enhanced abilities that the Patriot has is because he was taking a cocktail of the actual serum that made his grandfather and Captain America who they are. But it was also like kind of killing his body until he was injured and his grandfather was the only blood type. So now he kind of has enhanced strength due to his grandfather. But I just always liked, you know, reading. He was like one of my favorite characters when he came out.
He's gay?
No, he's not gay.
Well, you said he came out.
Yeah, he came out.
I misunderstood. I'm sorry.
Of concept, not coming out of the closet. Like, hello!
Not that
I'm aware of, but you know, Marvel has been known to change people's origin and their story.
Would you say his star points north?
It does. Okay. It is, you know, man, that's a lot of ice up north.
Yes.
What I always thought was interesting, because Bobby Drake, they've kind of retconned him. And
that's why he just made the Iceman comic.
Yeah. But I'm just, what I was going to say is this, with him and North Star, it's like two
mutant-related.
I heard a rumor. Yeah. I'm sorry, we're getting off topic here. As we are occasionally doing. I heard a rumor that Marvel might do some rearranging with some of their titles, and like basically like the X-Men Gold and the X-Men Blue and things like that are gonna like, there's gonna be like main universe X-Men, and the other one's gonna be like almost like the Ultimate again.
Oh, see, I have to take a look at that,
because I hear their sales are bad.
I've heard that too.
Oh, on both books or just
on all books?
Oh,
yeah.
That they're going to. There's rumor going around that they might have to rearrange a lot of things. And
yeah, I've heard that too. Unfortunately.
Yeah, well, you know, when you change characters who's been established for decades.
Yeah.
I mean, you know,
while still making movies about the originals.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
And you know, you know, you can have different types of characters, different ethnicities, different, you know, preferences.
But don't take away my original.
Yeah, don't take away the original. Or just introduce a new character that is that character. That might be bisexual or whatever.
And
just make that character interesting.
And I think what Marvel did, especially with the X-Men, it was just more, it was way convoluted, because you had literally different. It was almost worse than in the 90s. It was like different sections of X-Men. It's like, okay, if these are, you brought back the original X-Men from a timeline, but they're over here, but then you have this X-Men over here, but then all of a sudden you have a small group of X-Men here, and it's kind of like, who's at the mansion?
Yeah.
who are the X-Men and what are they doing?
Yeah.
So,
who is your daddy and what does he do?
Exactly. I'm like,
who are your X-Men and what do they do?
You're trying to, So I hope Marvel cleans that up.
Yeah, I do too. Because it seems that's the boat that DC seems to be in also with a lot of their stuff, is that they've changed things so many times that it's hard to.
People can't recognize.
Yeah, what's, you know, and what's canon anymore?
I mean, for example, the Jane Foster Thor.
Yeah.
That's a sweet idea.
It is.
That's a great idea.
It is,
But I don't need regular Thor to go away to enjoy her having the power of the Ozone Sun. If it is, you know, whatever. That's the one that I'm really okay with. But I like my Bruce Banner.
Yeah.
Which he's back, by the way.
Yeah.
He's back.
They're gradually bringing everybody back, but I mean,
as they do, you know, a lot of these changes seem to be temporary.
Right. Like the Thor, like Jane Foster as Thor. I like that. I also like both the way they are handling the Iron Man titles, because you have Infamous Iron Man, which is Doctor Doom. Good series. You gotta read it. Then Iron Man, Invincible Iron Man Tony Stark is there, but he's kind of like a
disembodied robot.
Yeah,
disembodied. Or artificial intelligence.
Artificial
intelligence. With the personality of Tony Stark.
Yeah.
He's the new Jeeves.
Yeah, he's the new Jeeves. Plus, he has a young upstart, which that's fine too. And even the Captain America with Sam Wilson and Steve Rogers, that was fine. It was just some of the other things that are like, what is the point of this? Because you completely.
They're just changing it to change it, it seems like.
Yes.
It seems like they change it not for the story, but more for an attempt at getting more sales.
Correct.
It seems to have backfired.
Yes. So,
yes.
I don't know.
That's how I feel.
Yeah. No,
I've lost track of where we were.
We were on number three, and I was talking about the Patriot.
Okay.
So.
And you finished.
And I am finished.
All right.
Okay.
That's the Patriot.
My number three is a cheat.
Ooh.
I've cheated.
Cheated.
Because I'm going to give one character's origin story. But because of that character's origin story, it leads to hundreds of others.
Oh, hundreds.
What?
Man. All right.
And it's not going to be where you think.
Okay.
I'm going to talk about someone created by Stanley and Jack Kirby.
Okay.
All right.
1963.
All right.
On the X-Men number one
okay.
cover. We're talking about Magneto.
Okay.
Because Magneto, when you talk his origin story, it is tied to the racism earlier in the century.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You've got a young, I forget what country, Austrian or whatever.
Yeah.
Jew whose family was killed by... Rick's favorite, the Nazis.
I think that's like what four episodes in a row we had Nazis.
Yeah. With Nazis,
we always have Nazis. Yeah,
Nazis, and apparently America does too.
Right. Well, at least we had some hurricanes to get the news off of
the Nazis.
Yeah. The tiki bearing Nazis.
Yeah, yeah.
And their polos. My gosh. I'm
right,
sorry.
Right? Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
Captain America punches Nazis. There is no room in America
for Nazis.
For Nazis. If Captain America punches you.
Yeah. That's pretty much just saying, hey. Get out of my country. Yeah,
right. Right.
So,
and I don't like to exclude people based on their beliefs, but I make an exception for Nazis.
Yeah.
I'm making the bold statement of saying that I'm not behind the Nazi movement.
No.
So you're saying you would be okay with Nazis getting punched in the face by Captain America?
I
think it's pretty much...
I'm okay with Nazis getting punched in the face by anybody.
Yeah, yeah, really.
Yeah, this is true. So
Magneto.
Universal agreement that Nazis.
Well, by universal, I can speak for two of us for sure. I don't.
Oh goodness.
So anyway, Magneto, family killed by Nazis, captured, taken to Auschwitz, depending on which version of the story. But I'm going original.
Okay.
Meets, you know, eventually is freed from Auschwitz, and meets a young Romani, which is the official term for gypsies, apparently. A woman named Magda, who he takes as his wife, and then villagers get together and burn down their house with Magda still inside, and that unleashes the full fury of Magneto. And Magda actually lives from that. She,
right.
But she sees him for what he is and never wants to see him again. Changes his name from Max to Eric and moves to Israel, where he meets a young Professor Xavier, which starts the origin story of Professor Xavier, which starts the origin story of the X-Men. It's the very first villain the X-Men ever face. He's a storied history with them over hundreds of issues. Became a part of the X-Men for a time.
Still is.
Leader of the New Mutants.
Leader of the New Mutants for a time.
Yeah.
One of my favorite X-Men, Uncanny X-Men moments, and I think it might be from an annual, is where he's in the middle of the Danger Room and he's giving the X-Men, basically, they have one mission right now, and that is to touch him. And he's taking on all of the X-Men. Just such a powerful character.
Yeah, yeah.
And just B.A.,
yeah, yeah.
And it's unfortunate now in hindsight that his origin story is so tied to an actual historical event, because as time goes on, they're going to have to change that,
yeah,
or he's going to
be
150 years old, you know?
Yeah. That is
so
true, yeah.
Maybe if Rick gets his way, we can have a new genocide and they can retcon his... they can retcon his...
Or they could do what they did in the early, in the late 90s, early 2000s, that they made him young again and then make him old again. But,
yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that was weird.
Yeah,
that was weird.
With Joseph.
That was actually around the time that I tuned out of the X-Men for a while. I have those issues. It was just hard for me to stay invested in that story because I didn't know what they were doing.
Right. That's a really good. Magneto is like my favorite villain.
He's definitely up there on the charts for me too.
Yeah,
I like Doctor Doom when he's handled well. Mm-hmm.
I like Doctor Doom too. Yeah. That's the thing is, Doctor Doom might be my. I don't know. It depends on the day of the week.
Yeah. Yep. And the story, I think, for me.
Because he was just. I think we had talked about this in a previous podcast about villains and stuff. But to me, it's like he's one of the few people where his point of view.
It's valid.
And hero's like, you kind of got a point. Like, when Thanos comes, you're like, okay, you're definitely a bad guy. I can't see your point. But
it's probably bad.
Magneto has seen the worst of humanity and is just predicting that it will continue that way.
Right.
Yeah.
And he's not wrong.
Yeah, it's very true.
It's just execution.
You know, and here's the thing, and this is what I think this is probably the nature of people, and maybe says a lot about myself, but everybody thinks if granted superpowers, they would be the hero. But I don't think most people would. I think most people would do heroic things, but would still probably be evil. And if, you know, what they say about power corrupting. So I would assume that the further you go down that rabbit hole, I'm just saying.
Yeah. It's hard to disagree with you.
Yeah.
Because great power comes with responsibility.
That's right.
And you mean to tell me that if I had the power of teleportation, I would not be tempted to rob a bank?
Yeah.
I
just
would.
Just once, you know. They wouldn't miss.
I will leave an IOU.
Or it's not a bank, you know, someplace that needs robbed, someplace, you know, evil.
Yeah.
You know.
They don't need these weapons of mass destruction.
Right?
Yeah, seriously.
Exactly.
I'd go to North Korea and steal their riches.
Yeah, whatever they might be.
I don't think they have much riches.
Yeah. It's hard for me to even think of what North Korea has.
Concentration camps.
Yeah.
In the modern day, that's sad.
Yeah, it is. That's horrible.
Well, this took a downward turn here.
Yeah.
Nazis. All right, go to Rick's.
Nazis and genocides and North Korea and politics and.
That's right. Ooh. Okay.
What
about
this timeline?
Yeah. Number three.
I blame Hillary Clinton's emails.
Oh man. All right, I kind of cheated on my number three too.
Yeah,
sure. My number three, I could probably technically make it four origin stories.
Okay.
And the reason why is because this character's origin is masked in mystery.
Okay.
Oh.
Yes, and the character I'm talking about is the Phantom Stranger.
Ooh.
I've always really, for whatever reason, I don't know why, I've always thought this character is really interesting and fascinating.
Yeah.
I think mostly probably because of the way I was first introduced to him through Alan Moore's run on Swamp Thing.
Yeah.
I really just like the way he handled him.
That's what I call it when I fart in an elevator and then send it up.
The Phantom Stranger.
Yeah.
Or if you sit on your hand and make it numb.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's totally different. That's that's called something. Yeah, something.
Well, like Phantom Menace.
The Phantom Menace. Whoa.
It's really weird. Sam sits on my hand all the time, and we do that, and it doesn't feel any different to me.
No. Where did that come from?
The Phantom Stranger. Stranger's hand. So the first appearance of the Phantom Stranger. Oddly enough, appeared in Phantom Stranger number one.
Yeah.
This was way back in August-September of 1952.
Oh, wow.
September, I guess, because it must have been like a two-month type deal, I guess. Originally created by John Byrum, Carmine Infantino, and Cy Barry.
Okay.
Was the inker. This character, the reason why I picked him is because they're... One of the things when I first got into Phantom Stranger from Swamp Thing, the Alan Moore run on Swamp Thing, was I wanted to learn more about this character. I'm like, this character's fascinating to me. And what better way to learn about a character than from a comic book line that DC had called Secret Origins.
Okay.
And there, in their comic book run of Secret Origins, there's an issue, issue number 10, that features the Phantom Stranger. And I'm like, oh, this is perfect. I'm going to learn the Phantom Stranger's origin.
Got it.
Did it have the comics code symbol?
It did have the comic code symbol.
Oh, surprise.
But, but the thing that
given was, the origin I've learned so far.
I know. Okay. It's it gets better. Okay. this issue, because the Phantom Stranger is kind of wrapped in mystery, it actually has four different origins.
Ooh.
And that's where I'm saying this is a little bit of a tricky one, because I could have probably used him for four of my five.
Got it.
If I really wanted to. In this special issue of Secret Origins, starring the Phantom Stranger, there were four different writers that took on his origin, one of them being Alan Moore.
Okay.
And the origins, I just think, were absolutely awesome. My favorite one was drawn by Jim Aparo and written by Mike W. Barr. And in this story, the Phantom Stranger is portrayed as a character named Isaac, who was in Bethlehem, and he had his wife and son there. They were living in Bethlehem. And soldiers of King Herod were searching for somebody.
Okay.
And they slaughtered women and children as they were searching for him.
Okay.
So they ended up killing his wife and his son.
Jesus.
Oh, wow.
You're right. So the person that they were looking for was Jesus.
Wow.
So Isaac being very...
And people have been looking for Jesus ever since.
Ever since, right? So Isaac, who we find out ends up being the Phantom Stranger. Spoiler! I'm going to kind of probably spoil the story, but I think it's a good story. And it's worth spoiling. The Isaac character, who is Phantom Stranger, is looking for Jesus because he's angry about him and just infuriated that he was the person that the soldiers were looking for, and, you know, kind of semi, you know, indirectly responsible for his wife and his son's death. He wants to get revenge on Jesus.
The baby Jesus. This is baby Jesus.
No, this is a full-grown Jesus.
He waited
after,
later. Apparently, he didn't look for him like that.
That
week.
Night or that...
Yeah. It was, you know...
Oh, no.
That'd be a much darker story.
They were looking for... okay, I got to understand now. I thought they were looking for a child, and they were just killing people's kids.
Yeah, they were.
Well, they're looking for baby Jesus.
They were at the time.
Okay.
But
yeah.
So he's mad at baby Jesus.
He didn't know why.
He found out that,
why
okay.
they were killing. He
got
found out years later that the reason why is that they were looking for...
mad at baby Jesus.
Baby Jesus. Looking for baby Jesus. So,
So why has no one made
like a
Holy Terminator movie where someone goes back in time to kill the baby Jesus?
I don't know. That's a good question. That's a good question. The
think of how many people would get riled up.
That would probably you'd stir up some controversy there with that for sure.
I feel like the life of Brian.
Would ya?
So, anyways, that's all right.
We're going back to Jesus Terminator.
Jesus.
Let's go.
That's right. So he finds Jesus because
the Germinator.
Soldiers have captured him. And he bribes a guard to switch places with him so he can dispense some physical revenge on Jesus. So instead of begging for mercy, Jesus quietly pronounces that while he may die, Isaac is condemned to walk the earth until Jesus returns.
Oh!
That doesn't seem very forgiving.
No. So, we end up finding out that the Phantom Stranger is actually a guy known as the Wandering Jew.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So, I thought that storyline was...
That's pretty
awesome. Yeah. So, I thought, yeah, it's... That is my favorite of the four. The other ones are...
I didn't think people like you liked stories about Jews.
Oh, my.
I keep trying to make Nazi happen.
The other stories are also very good. That's probably my favorite one. The other ones... Pam Stern was portrayed as being...
So just out of... You had four origin stories. Yes. And the one that you like the best is the one where a Jew gets cursed. I'm just verifying. Yeah, well, okay. Further evidence. I'm resting my case.
You walked into that one.
Oh, I did. I walked into that one. The other ones, he is a fallen angel, mm-hmm. which I think is also a very cool origin story as well, because he supposedly he fell with the demon Etrigan.
Oh, yes.
Which we know is the demon from...
The Rhymer.
Yeah, the Rhymer. There's also a future one that takes place. This one is actually the one that I believe is written by Alan Moore, is the one in the future. Or no, that's incorrect. The future one is one where he's also an angel.
Okay.
And that's actually the demon metric. Reversed. So, yeah, I just wanted to spoil one of the stories because the other ones are also and definitely worth picking up that issue of Secret Origins. Number 10.
All right, look at that.
The cover alone is awesome. I'm going to show you guys the cover because I think it's super cool and it's a neat idea, especially since it has to do with four different origin stories.
Well, that is cool.
Yeah.
Show the podcast.
So
podcast. Yeah, there you go.
Hold it up to the microphone.
All right. See? Okay. Yeah. All right. Imagine, if you will, a picture.
Dig, if you will,
a Dig picture. That's how it goes. I totally even got it off.
Man, I didn't even know you for sure were referencing
that. I referenced Bromley, though.
I never, you know, pass up a chance to... quote Prince.
I know. You don't have to be.
Okay.
All right. So that's my number three, The Phantom Stranger.
Phantom Stranger. That's nice. Number three.
Okay.
And now.
That brings us.
Oh, man.
To the deuce.
To the deuce. Number two.
Put your deuce in my ear hole.
The dose.
Let it wiggle around and see what grows.
That is messed up. I think that's like a section of its own kind. Two girls in a cup kind of messed up right there.
Well, I just meant that I wanted to listen to what your number two was. I think you're reading far more into this. And to let it foster in my brain and see what comes of it, because I'm so interested in what your number two choices,
but I see.
You took that to a dark place, Sam.
I'll bring it back to the light.
Yeah, bring it back to the light.
To the two. Number two.
All right, yeah. Number two.
Fertilizer. Let's go.
My number two is the superhero named Prime.
Prime.
That's right. Prime first appeared in Prime number one. And from July of 1993, created, the comic came out from Malibu Comics. The creators were Bob Jacob, Gerard.
Jacob Schmidt.
His name's my name. Gerard Jones, Lynn Stravinsky, and Norm Breyfogle. I hope I said that last one right. It followed...
Breyfogle. That's a... He's a Batman artist for...
There you go.
He's good.
Yeah.
I like his stuff.
Boom. He was on Prime. Man. He originated it. Yep. It followed a 13-year-old boy named Kevin Green. His powers were that he could grow this skin out of his skin. That looks
Mine just...
Like an ectoplasmic
skin that formed into a big...
For a second, I was like, I had that power.
Right.
Ectoplasm. I thought you were talking about the elongated man. Sorry.
I too, when I picked up the Cosmic Sports Illustrated swimsuit issue.
Oh, my goodness. And this ectoplasmic skin that formed into an Adonis-like man, which had superpowers of flight, super strength, mostly invulnerability, anything, you know, every superhero power that a kid would ever want. But I wanted to dig into his origin story because it's kind of creepy. His father, Russell Green, worked at a top secret military research area. Now, him and his wife were trying to have children, but they were unsuccessful. So then they asked one of the top scientists at a secret military facility to help them be able to have children.
So you seek out the...
Yeah. Military? Yeah. Isn't that... a little sketchy, maybe.
Well, they can help you stop shooting blanks. That's for sure.
That's for sure.
Yay. Yeah, there it was.
Like it.
Yeah.
So they asked the head, one of the head leading doctors, Dr. Vincent Gross. Mm. Let's keep that name over there. Mm. To help them. And, you know, Dr. Gross thought this would be a prime opportunity.
Prime.
Oh.
That's
open. What kind of opportunity?
Oh, a prime opportunity.
Wow. Somehow, yeah, I think that's going to be important.
Well, maybe, possibly. To do some experiments on the couple. Well, he wasn't really using anything that the... FDA would approve of as these experiments were going on. And the government got wind of this, that Dr. Gross were among other things, doing stuff that was not legal, and basically shut him down. What the government did not know is that the Greens were now pregnant.
It's not easy being green.
It's not easy being green. So the birth of their son, Kevin, was born. And for the most part, he was a normal kid. Didn't get sick. Didn't really have to go to the doctor. So no one really noticed until he turned 13.
Ooh, lucky number 13.
Lucky number 13, where puberty starts. And you know, as... You know, most 13-year-olds and get to that certain age when they start to become a man and stuff, when they're sleeping, you know, they begin to dream. Well, Kevin was dreaming, and all of a sudden, he was getting really hot. He had a fever, and all of a sudden, the skin was growing around him. And he had no idea, and then the skin fell off of him. And he just thought it was some sort of nightmare. A day later, he saw a gym teacher harassing a student, a female student, got really mad, and all of a sudden, he turns into prime. One of the first acts was he confronted that gym teacher and basically broke his arm.
Oh.
And then flew off. So I just when I first read the comic and everything, I just was kind of like, it was just a weird origin story because, you know, it literally says top secret military research center. So it's like, why would you ask a scientists who are doing military weaponry and stuff for how they get pregnant?
Yeah, you wouldn't think that'd be your first choice.
That wouldn't be your first choice. It's the government, no matter what.
Maybe like a second choice.
You see what happened to Dr. Banner.
Yeah, when Satan doesn't come through as your first choice, then
right. The government. It's like the
well, Kimmy. Of course, I guess if you're trying to get pregnant, you don't really want to go for plan B, do you? Oh, I got it all today.
Oh man. You are like the Cleveland Indians.
Win after win.
Win after win.
The Windians.
The That's Windians.
Right.
Go Tribe.
Yep.
So, interesting fact about a little bit more about Prime. He is from the Ultraverse, and which also has Hardcase and some other people. And Marvel has purchased Malibu Comics in 1994, so they have all the properties.
Oh, so they could bring Prime back.
That is correct.
Wow,
interesting.
So a little interesting fact. So,
all right,
that is my number two. The deuce.
The deuce.
All right,
I like it.
I'm gonna give you my deuce to chew on right now.
Oh. This is going to be a tasty deuce.
I'm going to preface now that if you've not completed the Harry Potter series, you might want to excuse yourself from this conversation. There will be spoilers. That was me giving you all time. Okay. Rick? I too like to live dangerously. I noticed that you have stayed seated.
I have. Because I think I pretty much know everything about that I need to know about Harry Potter. Right?
This, I'm not passion, Harry right? Potter is not my choice for number two.
Oh, okay.
Let's see.
All right.
This is about to get dangerous.
Oh, it is. Yeah. We're going into, like, seriously, there's going to be spoilers. There's no way I can talk about this without there being spoilers.
Oh, okay.
So if you don't want it ruined, you might want not to listen.
Oh, man, I don't know. You're giving me a choice here now.
My deuce is Severus Snape.
Okay. I know who Snape is.
Yeah. Do you know his origin?
No.
Yeah, well, then there's going to be spoilers.
Oh, okay. Ooh.
Severus Snape. I mean, seriously, spoilers.
Okay.
Okay. All right. I'm just giving you every chance. Severus Snape, in the final book, his true origin is revealed that he is not just the mean teacher that you've known this entire time. He was an awkward young boy who, on his way to Hogwarts, was met. Well, I don't know if it was on the way to Hogwarts that they met, but regardless, went to Hogwarts at the same time as a certain Lily Potter. On the train ride there, he was bullied by Sirius Black and James Potter, who Harry resembles quite a bit. His origin story is one of love and sacrifice.
Oh, okay. Right.
He did everything. He joined the Death Eaters, Voldemort's evil group, but spied on them for Dumbledore and the others that were fighting against them, the Order of the Phoenix. He made certain deals that I don't want to discuss because it gets too spoilery.
Okay.
But paid a very soul-crushing price to commit an act that was for the good. And after Lily Potter's death, turned so far on Voldemort that he agreed to help Dumbledore keep Lily's son safe for his rest of his life. Ultimately, I don't think it's too much of a spoiler, ultimately, helping, sacrificing himself to those ends. And then Harry finds out about it through Snape's memories, and he's able to see his father through Snape's eyes. He's able to see his mother through Snape's eyes, and he's able to see that Snape's Patronus to ward off evil is the same as Lily's, a doe, which does not fit in with Slytherin house very well. What else do I want to say about that? I don't know. His origin is heartbreaking, and as an addendum, not a huge spoiler, but it is the end of the seventh book, where Harry has his own kids later, and he's named the one Albus after Dumbledore, and his middle name is Severus. Because the kid is afraid he's going to get sorted into Slytherin, and he said Albus Severus Snape. I don't remember the exact words, but basically, you're named after two headmasters of Hogwarts, and one of them was Slytherin, and he was the bravest man I've ever met. So there you go.
You just made me want to find out more about Harry Potter.
You probably should, because
it's funny because I actually talked about this with my son over the weekend. I was like, I think we're going to watch all the Harry Potter movies together.
Connor still won't watch the last one.
No?
No. Because they get so intense by the end.
Oh, do they really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
They get gradually more adult as they go, starting really with the third one. The second one's just like the first one in terms of tone and stuff. The third one starts to get a little bit darker. The fourth one a little bit. By the fifth one, I'd say they're pretty. But he's watched the fifth and the sixth and the first part of the seventh one. I mean, he watched, because that's broken into two. But at that point, he knows that people are going to die.
Oh, okay.
And so I think he's holding on to his childhood for a little bit. Yeah. So that's my number two.
All right, that's a good number two.
My deuce.
Your deuce was good.
My deuce.
That's a good deuce.
Watched over Harry Potter.
All right. I had a hard time with this deuce.
Did you?
I did. I didn't know.
Did you eat cheese before trying to pick it?
A little bit. I mean, a little bound up with this deuce.
Did you put your finger in there and see whether or not it would come out?
Wow, that's a whole different ballgame right there.
I'm not your ear.
But eventually, I think I've decided, I've forced this deuce out of me. And the one that I've decided upon is a character that first appeared in Swamp Thing, the Saga of the Swamp Thing, number 37.
Okay.
In June 1984, created by Alan Moore, Stephen Bissett, and John Tolbin. And the character was originally, the character's look was originally inspired by the pop artist Sting. And the character I'm talking about is John Constantine. In fact, in some of his very first appearances, he looks exactly like Sting.
Mm.
And I guess the artists, Stephen Bissett and John Tolbin, they wanted to have a reason to incorporate Sting into one of the comics. And I guess they spoke with Alan Moore. They're like, hey, we want to do this character, yada, yada, yada. We want him to look like this. And then so Alan Moore just kind of, okay, we'll take that and we'll do this with him. So they kind of mashed them together with some different ideas that they had, and they came up with John Constantine. The actual origin story of John Constantine, I don't know where you'd actually start with his origin. Like, if you talked about
conception. Let's talk about conception.
And I was going to go there, actually, because in the Jamie Delano storyline of, I don't know if you ever read any of the early... Mm-hmm. Okay. So you probably know where this is going.
I do.
It gets a little dark. The John Constantine's mother dies giving birth to him. But also,
can we go back a little bit farther than that?
I am. And one of the reasons why she dies is because earlier on, John's father, Thomas, had convinced her to have an abortion earlier, which ended up weakening her womb. But also, while John Constantine is in the womb, he has a twin brother in there. That while he's in there, he ends up strangling his twin brother with the umbilical cord. His brother, so his brother comes out stillborn. So yeah, it's kind of a dark little origin, dark little beginning of his life, growing up without his mom, his father. Thomas was never able to, accept any responsibility for possibly causing his mother's death. Blamed John for all of it, so this created a pretty big wall between him and his father. John kind of went his own way several times doing different things, getting involved in the occult, as, you know, teenagers do, apparently. And he joined a punk rock band at one point also, kind of speeding this up a little bit so as not to drag it out any further. But the Mucous Membrane was the name of the punk rock band that he formed. And
that's pretty great.
It's, which is an awesome name.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
The
can I intersect real quick?
Oh, yeah,
we were talking about band things. You know how I've mentioned on here, because we were talking about Fits in the Tantrums, and I said how I like, you know, Dig Him in the Honey Smacks. I don't necessarily know what the band's name is, but at work we have a product and the labels sometimes don't exactly describe what it is, but the label for this says Hot Nuts Fuego. And I feel that is a great name for a blues artist.
That would be awesome, actually. That would be a really good
name. I would like you all to call me that from now on.
Hot Nuts Fuego.
Yeah.
Fuego.
Oh, you sure like nuts and a deuce?
I do. I mean, let's be honest.
So.
I love hearing your deuce, and the taste of nuts in my mouth is amazing.
So, yeah.
You know what I like better than nuts? Five Guys.
Five Guys.
I've had Five Guys in my mouth so many times.
Yeah. All at once?
Yep.
Okay.
I mean, the burgers, you know, it's a great chain.
Well, that's what I meant, you know.
That's what we were talking about.
Yep.
Five Guys burger.
So,
delicious.
Real quick.
Totally different podcast.
So, I have to tell you this. this was great. I was at work one time, and we were discussing, one of the managers was on a ketogenic diet where you eat all... it's a high fat, low carbohydrate diet.
Okay.
And she is explaining that she went off of her diet.
Okay.
Right as an hourly associate walks in the room, and what he hears is, yes, the first time I cheated, it was with Five Guys.
Wow.
And his face was like, he just got the smirk on his face. And I started laughing so hard. It was great.
That is pretty hilarious.
Like, she likes to party.
There you go. And who else likes to party? John Constantine.
John Constantine, the Mucous Membrane.
So, the event that probably really kind of solidifies and creates John Constantine, the character, is an event that happens at Newcastle. He stops there with some of his bandmates because they hear about this party that's going on there. And there is a girl there. The party that was going on there, where people had summoned a monster there and basically killed many of the people that were there and terrorizing the young girl. John Constantine kind of makes a hasty decision and is like, okay, something to save this young girl. So he and his bandmates from Mucous Membrane, he convinces bandmates to summon a demon to fight the monster, to kill the monster, to save the girl.
Okay.
Summons the monster, or summons the demon, but does not use his true name. So once he summons him, he doesn't have any control over what this demon does. So the demon does, in fact, kill the monster, but takes the little girl, drags her to hell.
Oh, wow.
That whole event causes John Constantine to have, like, a nervous breakdown, and he ends up going to the Raven Scar mental institution and spends some time there and comes out. That, to me, seems that's probably, like... all those other events had occurred, you know, but that's probably like a real defining moment that kind of made John Constantine become the Hellblazer, if you will. So, yeah.
I love me some Constantine.
I do too. When he's done right, it's just awesome.
And Alan Moore is a person who I'd like to just be in a room with and listen to.
I would too, just to see what he would have to say, what he would talk about.
Yeah. That's a good one.
All right. That's my deuce.
That's his deuce.
That's my deuce.
And now...
I would like to apologize in advance that my voice is not going to be up to my normal...
Normal vocal standards.
Yeah. As we talk about the R. Kelly Memorial. Number one.
Number one.
Number one. Number one.
Okay, my number one. Now, over the years, there have been crossovers.
Oh, okay.
By the way, do you know what R. Kelly's favorite vegetable is?
What's that?
The leek.
The leek.
I see. All
right, go on.
All right. There has been crossovers. There's been times when the DC and the Marvel Universe have somewhat gotten along. There was Batman versus Superman. I mean, Spider-Man versus Superman.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Spider-Man and Batman. The X-Men and the Teen Titans.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
So we've had, like, some good examples. This number one origin story is the origin of an entire universe.
Oh, man. You went...
Broad strokes.
If you're going to be number one, you got to go big.
Oh, there you go.
Whoa.
Or go home. Because that's a big one.
I usually like to go big with my deuce.
You big with your deuce?
Yeah.
I go big with the number one.
Very good.
And that is the Omegan universe, which was first established in the Marvel DC event, Marvel versus DC, issue number 3. A little backstory, two cosmic entities, which were in the comics were referred to as the Brothers, which I found kind of funny, both represented the respected universes, both Marvel and DC. And they were basically asleep and they woken up and they kind of found each other and they had a contest of whose universe is better. And whoever wins, the loser's universe gets destroyed. And so it was the contest, which brings us to the Marvel versus DC, which was, as you remember, two opponents would fight each other till one of them can't move for 5 seconds. So you had the whole Superman versus the Hulk. You had Wolverine versus Lobo. Captain America versus Batman. The Flash versus Quicksilver. So you had all those matches going along. And what ended up happening was at the conclusion, the heroes... both on both sides didn't want their universes destroyed. So it took the effort of the Spectrum and the Living Tribunal in order to stop the brothers from destroying a universe, they formed and merged their universes and to bring in the Almagum. I think I pronounced it wrong.
I don't know how to say it. I've never actually heard the word said.
Well, let's find out. Amalgam. As my phone.
Amalgam.
Amalgam universe. Which means merging as its definition. Which brought us the origins of Darkclaw, Super Soldier, Doctor Strange Fate, and one of my favorites, Lobo the Duck.
I didn't never see that one. Oh, how did I not know that existed?
Yes. So, as you can think of, Darkclaw
I'm Googling this right now.
Is Wolverine and Batman merged together?
Why would I put in Lobo? Lobo the Duck was the first thing that popped up.
Look at that. The universe.
Lobo the Duck.
Lobo the Duck.
Are you familiar with?
No.
No, that's one of the characters with the merging of. Of the
amalgamating
universe. Darkclaw. Darkclaw is...
From this day forward, we do not ever say that word. When it comes up, when we're going to talk about it, we're going to resort to our phones.
Yes.
So just so you know.
The...
amalgam.
universe.
There you go. All right.
I'm familiar with it, but I am not familiar with the... Oh, man, come on.
That's a lot of...
Amalgams.
Okay, there we go. Amalgams, there we go.
I'm not familiar with that universe's...
Universe's creations.
With Lobo. I'm familiar with Darkclaw.
Darkclaw is the most famous one.
Doctor Strange's fate.
That is the merging of Wolverine and Batman.
That's the only one I'm familiar with, actually. I'm sad to say I'm not... that familiar with the Amalgam universe. I know basically what it is, but that's
right.
You know, you've given me more information just now, Sam, than I've
So it brought in.
I didn't know the backstory exactly. Sam has enlightened me.
That's the backstory. So you had, like, again, you had the super soldier, which was Superman and Captain America. That really wasn't a stretch of names. Yeah.
Strange Fate's kind of cool.
Doctor Strange Fate is pretty cool.
I think I knew about that one.
Doctor Strange Fate was pretty cool.
Yeah.
And there was Speed Demon. You know who was Speed Demon? And technically there's a Speed Demon in both the Marvel and the DC Universe. But this particular Speed Demon was the Flash merging with Ghost Rider.
Ghost Rider. Ah, interesting. Right.
Then you could have Quicksilver with the Demon.
Quick Demon. Or...
Demon Silver.
Demon
Silver.
No.
Silver Demon? No.
No. No. But my favorite...
always work.
It seems like one of the American Gladiators.
Yeah.
But when I seen Lobo the Duck, I was like, that is just...
That's a pretty amazing
picture. It is good.
I was unaware of Lobo the Duck.
Lobo the Duck was around. So we had that particular universe, the
Amalgam
universe. It was around for a bit while after DC and Marvel were put back in their separate universes and everything. There was for a while there the comic line that had both had the
Amalgam
universe as its own comic book line. So and they shared the properties. And did you know, a quick little insert, there is a comic book character from the
Amalgam
universe that both DC and Marvel share?
Okay.
Really?
Yes.
Which of the
Amalgam
universe people would that be? That was in Deutsch, by the way.
That was in Deutsch?
That's amazing.
Because
I've got so many. I've got more tongue action than Usher.
Whoa, hello.
His name was Access, and he could go from one universe to the other, and he was key in to unmerging the universes back to their original spots.
Interesting.
So he was, I'm trying to remember what his name was besides Access. I mean, that was his code name, but his real name escapes me right now. But he was created just for this event. So he was a normal guy until he got the powers granted to him, just like Silver Surfer. So that is my number one, the
Amalgam
universe.
Nice. Yeah, I want to know more about this Lobo the Duck.
The pictures I've just seen, as I may go searching for some of that.
You know, the main man as a duck. I think
it would work.
The more I think about it, the more I just think it works, and it's not, you know, I mean.
Here's the thing.
The series might be terrible, might be written poorly, but the images alone are worth it. I'm upset I've never had a Lobo the Duck commission done yet.
Whoa. That's a good idea for a commission.
Yeah, it is.
I like that.
Lobo the Duck.
Lobo the Duck.
All right. Are we ready for my R. Kelly Memorial number one?
Number one.
Love Slave. Splash it all over your body. I'm going... You know, all right, that's a deep cut. Have you ever heard of Infectious Grooves?
I have heard of Infectious
Grief. It's the singer and bass player from Suicidal Tendency had a funk band as well. And they had their first, their debut album CD was called The Plague That Makes Your Booty Move.
Wow.
And there was a frog that would at various times in between songs talk about trying to get, basically he was trying to get into the studio to record. And I think the dude was just doing improv. I don't know who he was, but he'd be like, haven't you ever heard my hit song, Whipped Cream? Whipped cream, put it all over your body. and so that stuck with me for the last 25 years or so.
That's
the one was like, haven't you ever heard my other hit song? The love that you will find is the love that you will never find because it is not always love able to be found. So this is what's going on in my head at all times. I'm going back to basics with my number one.
Okay.
A simple number one.
A simple number one.
An old number
sometimes
one.
Sometimes always the best is going simple.
Sometimes.
Simple Rick.
Simple Rick.
Simple Rick. and I'm going to tell it in 8 words.
Okay.
They're not my words. They're Grant Morrison's words.
Oh.
As his retelling was one page of a comic. He retold an entire origin story with those 8 words. 4 or 6 panels. I'm not sure how many. So here it is, because he sums it up perfectly. A story everybody knows: doomed planet, desperate scientists, last hope, kindly couple, and the origin is Superman.
That's awesome.
That is my favorite retelling of his origin. It is the most minimalist version of that story that you've ever seen, and. It was from the first page of All-Star Superman number 1.
Okay. And that sums it all up.
It does. That's, it sums up everything you need to know. And there's a lot to be said about, and I don't mean to offend you by this, Rick, that the Superman, that his story is actually, you know, kind of a version of telling the immigrant story of 2 Jewish men from Cleveland, that, you know, he is the outsider. you know, obviously I'm not going to go through everybody knows this. But I felt it was disrespectful to include it on my list and not have it at number 1, cause it's probably the most famous comic book origin of all time.
That's probably true. I've heard such good things about that All-Star Superman run.
I liked it for what I read.
Everyone's told me how good it is.
It was a lot better than, I don't want to offend anyone, it was a lot better than the Frank Miller All-Star Batman.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That was nice. There were 2 parts in that All-Star Batman that just made you go, am I really reading this?
Right.
When he... I mean, we've come a long way and everything, but I just don't, in today's society, would not feel comfortable saying this word. He asks Robin if he is the R word because he's not talking in the Batmobile at the beginning after he's just in the Batmobile. I've never been in the Batmobile before.
Really?
Yeah.
Meat rats.
The only good part of it is the fact that at some point he calls himself, he refers to himself as the goddamn Batman.
That's been like a meme.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's...
That became one of my favorite Twitter accounts for a while. Yeah. But it was a weird series. I love Frank Miller and all that. He went weird places with that.
Yeah.
But the artwork was beautiful.
Oh, yeah. I got them both. I think I have like the first 3 issues and then I was like, yeah, I'm done. I'm out.
Yeah, I don't know how long I lasted. Which is pretty much the story of my life. Jim Lee has amazing artwork, though. But
yes.
I forget. Was it Frank Quitely that did All-Star Superman?
I think so.
It's good.
All right. I guess it's time for my number one.
Yeah, sure.
All right. My number one was the reason why I selected this one as number one is because one of the creators of this character.
By the way, go ahead. Follow up the creation of the universe and the creation of the first superhero. Go on.
Same. I've got a high bar to go. But where I'm going to put all my cookies at, I guess. I don't know. I'm using bad analogy.
Yeah, seriously. If you're not going to go with marbles, then I would have tied it back down to the pee metaphor that we've been going with.
I'm going to put all on the creator, the writer.
You're going to pee all over your marbles and put them all where?
Oh man. The writer that we that just passed away, actually. Len Wein. He created this character along with Bernie Wrightson. And the character I'm talking about is Swamp Thing. So we know that we were going to talk about Len Wein at the beginning of the podcast, and I think we completely forgot about it.
No, I thought we saved it for this.
It works, I think, that, you know, so, but, I think.
We didn't forget. We never forget.
We never forget. That's
we
right.
We never forget his contributes to our youth and the comic world.
The comic world that we love so much. He did a lot of different characters, much more. Like, I always knew he did a lot, but going back and looking at his body of work, it's pretty impressive.
Let's talk real quick about the characters he created before we get into.
I think that's appropriate.
We'll start big, but Wolverine. These are the things that he either created or co-created.
Yeah.
Wolverine, Nightcrawler, Colossus, Swamp Thing, Amanda Waller, Storm, Clayface, Mockingbird, Kismet, Cottonmouth. I don't know how you say this, but I'm going to go with Shao Lao. Lucius Fox, Cheetah, Brother Voodoo, Mongol, Jigsaw, Jamie Madrox, Christopher Chance. This list is going on and on and on. Thunderbird, Constrictor, Equinox, Krakoa, the Living Island. I've added the Living Island just because I like to say Krakoa, the Living Island.
There you go. Who has a son, by the way?
He does.
Where? Yeah.
No.
Copperhead? Just a ton of others, but those are like a lot of the big ones. So.
Yeah, huge body work. That's the thing that impressed me. It was like, wow, I knew he'd done a lot of stuff, but I did not know. I knew about the big two, probably, the Swamp Thing and
Wolverine. I guess I didn't really realize how many of the all different X-Men
he created.
And that he was editor of Watchmen.
Yeah, which is also, wow, that's, you know, he has touched so many different books throughout his career. So, yeah, I was sad to see him leave, you know, and just to kind of go back with Swamp Thing, you know, we lost both of those creators this year.
Yeah.
Bernie Wrightson and Len Wein. So that's kind of crazy to me.
Yeah.
So, but the Swamp
Thing. Let's hope Alan Moore stays safe.
Yes, that's what I'm thinking. Somebody needs to put him in a safe, padded room. But yeah. Well, Swamp Thing. So his origin story, depending on how you want to go or where you want to go with it, can be a couple different ways. But I'm going to kind of go with the more traditional origin story. He first appeared in House of Secrets number 92. And then later on, he was kind of, the character kind of evolved a little bit and became Al Colland. They gave him a name and everything. And his origin story is that he originally was the scientist Dr. Al Colland. And somebody who's working on a biorestorative formula in the swamp and everything to try to do sciencey things with food, trying to food production and all that kind of stuff. Somebody who was jealous of that and also was interested in his wife at the time wanted that biorestorative formula. Make a long story short, Al Colin gets covered with the biorestorative formula, is caught on fire, runs into the swamp, dives in the swamp. They presume that he's dead. the guy that was interested in his wife and everything, and Linda Holland, which was his wife at the time, all assumed that he was dead, and she actually ended up marrying the guy that kind of killed him.
Mm.
But eventually, he emerges from the swamp as the Swamp Thing. Originally, the take on him was that he was more or less just a muck-encrusted creature of the swamp.
Got it.
Not really too much to him, just basically more or less just a big swamp monster that was strong and everything.
Swamp monster?
Basically thinking that it was a swamp monster.
Did you just Rock Lobster it?
Yeah, I did.
That was pretty awesome.
That'd be 52, awesome. And now I'm going to sing that every single time.
Swamp Lobster! Ding, 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 ding. Yeah, with the but the origin where I think the character really kind of grew was when Alan Moore kind of took him over and kind of made him more than just Alec Holland coming back as a swamp monster.
He was a swamp monster who had memories of Alec Holland, but yeah, wasn't
exactly,
and had to come to terms with the fact that he wasn't the person that he remembers being.
Yeah, he just had the memories of him, and also kind of made him more than just swamp monster. He's
sorry, from now on,
Rock someone Lobster
says,
did.
Someone says swamp monster, I'm going to be doing that.
But yeah, so you know, Alan Moore took the whole thing with Swamp Thing, kind of deconstructed the character, built him back up, and made him into a plant elemental, made him way more powerful than he was earlier, where he could basically regenerate himself at will, travel the planet, the universe even, just by regenerating. And pretty interesting character. I like him.
I like him too.
Me too.
All right, that's my number one.
All right.
Did we have any honorable mentions that anybody would like to share? Or
Batman.
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 What's his origin?
Hmm?
I'm unfamiliar with this character.
He's wealthy.
He's wealthy.
He's rich and bored and has nothing else to do with his time.
Interesting. I had a couple other characters kind of tossed around in my head, but most of the ones I just kind of wanted to stick with. The Swamp Thing's not really obscure, I don't think, but like,
right.
He's, you know, they've had movies of him made.
Exactly.
Spider-Man
origin.
Yeah. Anakin Skywalker.
I was going to, one of the ones I was kind of thinking of was Sandman.
Yeah.
Morpheus.
Oh, not Spider-Man Sandman?
Not Spider-Man Sandman. All which is, you know, that origin's good too.
And or Enter Sandman.
Or Enter Sandman.
Yeah.
Gripping your pillow tight.
Yes.
Yes. So, all right. I guess.
Speaking of exiting light.
Exiting light. Is it time for us to end?
Time for us to enter night.
Enter night.
Let me see.
Take our hand. We're off to Never Never Land.
There you go. All right. Sleep with one eye open.
Now we gotta finish it, man.
I know, you just did it again.
Yeah, come on, dude. Now we gotta finish it.
I couldn't help myself. We were almost out. It was playing in my head, and I don't know.
We were almost out.
All right.
Let's do a little take. All right.
All right. Thanks for listening. Check us out at
all the places.
All the places. All the things. AllOfMyIssues.com.
Facebook, All of My Issues. Twitter, at All of My Issues.
And you can listen to us on Stitcher if you're, well, you're probably listening to us on something as it is if you're hearing this. But yeah.
Like iTunes and Google Play.
There you go.
And Stitcher.
All right. Thanks for listening.
Later.
Bye.